Hi there, and welcome back to Victory Laps, part of the Throwback Thursday celebrations for the 50th anniversary of Riverside International Speedway. I'm Dylan Langell, and thank you again for pressing play at riversidespeedway.ca or clicking download on iTunes. And if you listen on iTunes or Apple Podcasts, click subscribe so you'll never miss an episode. Well, opening day for 2019 is in the books. The Kaylee Honda Triple 50s lived up to the hype last Saturday night. At lap 50, Greg Proud was leading, but after a spin of the Riverside roulette, we inverted the top five. And then at lap 100, we had another spin of the wheel where it landed on top 10 inverted, which meant Cole Butcher was able to drive away and he never looked back, winning the Kaylee Honda Triple 50s. It's a two-for-one special today on Victory Laps. We are going to hear from former promoter at Riverside, Ernie McLean, a little later in the show. But first, let's hear from the man who has presented a commemorative jacket before the Triple 50s, recognizing his involvement in racing for 70 years. Jim Hallahan is my first guest on Episode 6 of Victory Laps. I have the privilege of chatting with Canada's top stock car driver. We honored him at the Kaylee Honda Triple 50s for 70 years in racing. Jim Hallahan, my guest today on Victory Laps. Jim, how are you?
Very good.
What did you think of the Triple 50s last weekend?
I thought they were real good because of the big reason there was no damage to any of the cars. And it come through real well.
Well, we honored you on Saturday night before the event. Did we catch you off guard with that?
Catch me off guard, yes.
It was a nice surprise, though.
It was. You know, 70 years is a long time.
Well, let's start from there, Jim. What got you interested in racing back in 1949 or maybe before?
I've been car bug since I was 16. Actually, my first car was a Hupmobile, which I bought for $15 and a .22 rifle.
Wow.
That was my first car, and I've been car crazy ever since.
So what got you into stock car racing, though?
Well, it just started coming into effect there, and it was pretty cheap to get into, you know, stock car racing back then because my first car was only $25, and the seat belts were made out of a horse harness.
And that would be jalopy racing?
Well, that's all they had in those days. They didn't have any supers or any of the other faster stuff, so they had to start off with just whatever we could bring.
Where was the first track you started racing?
Streetsville, Ontario.
Compared to Riverside, how big is that track?
Oh, it was just a little, actually it was around a football field, and the people sat on the side of the hill there.
No guardrails?
No guardrails, no.
What are some of your memories first starting racing in 1949 and throughout the 50s?
Well, I guess Pinecrest Speedway. I started in there, and that I just seemed to mushroom from there. And then I've ran maybe 25, 30 different tracks since I started.
What brought you to the Maritimes in the 1960s?
Ernie McLean. He used to live in Ontario, and well, he was from New Brunswick, but then he went to Ontario for a few years to run a service station, and me and him became buddies. And then when he came back to New Brunswick there, he built the Speedway, and then after a couple of years, he got in contact with me, and he had this big 250, the race every year, the International, he called it, and I came down 1 year, and I won it, and then next year I brought about four other fellows down with me, and we did a little tour. We'd run Fredericton, Peterborough on the way, and then we'd come into River Glade, and then down to Yarmouth, and then back up to Riverside.
That was a big deal for racing fans around here, having Ontario drivers come to the Maritimes, right?
That was the biggest deal going, yes.
Do you remember your first time racing at Riverside?
Yeah, it was quite an experience because the track was built off of Bristol Speedway, and the banking was the biggest banking we've ever been on. So
there was no tracks in Ontario like that?
Cayuga was the only other one. That was a half mile, and it was banked real well, but it was a lot longer. and it wasn't quite as steep as Riverside. John Chisholm, he went down to Bristol, Tennessee, and took the measurements and scaled it down to the third mile that he's got there in any Caniche right now.
Would it have been around 1969 that the first couple races at Riverside were your first times too?
Yeah. That's about the first time.
What brought you to stay in the Maritimes permanently?
Ivan Forbes. Well, I used to come down for about 3 or 4 years, and pretty well, I think our equipment was a little better than what they had down here, and we won most of the races down here. And then Ivan Forbes had a car that ran out in St. Lucasville there, and he got in contact with me and gave me a job driving his race car plus sell cars for him. And it was just that I come down in 68, and I loved it so much I haven't gone back since.
You got hooked by the weather, maybe, the racing, a little bit of everything?
The racing more than anything else, yeah.
And that
weather, I don't know if it's any better than Ontario or not.
Especially with this spring, it's been quite rainy, right?
Yes, it was.
So that was the Hugger you started driving for Ivan Forbes?
That's what it was, the Hugger.
So what kind of car was that, if someone doesn't know?
It was a Camaro, Z28 Camaro.
And would that be one that would be right in the showroom, you'd throw a roll cage in it and race it?
Well, it was in the showroom at one time, but we cut it up and put the bars in it and fenders off it, and you cut it right out. You know, you make them as light as possible. She lasted for a couple of years, and then I had to move on.
What was your ride after the Hugger?
After the Hugger, Don Alexander and myself bought a car out of Ontario, and it was a Mustang, Ford Mustang. We ran that for a couple of years. And then I had another one that I had. It was another Camaro that I run, Lucasville and Dartmouth International Speedway. Plus, when we ran, there was races in Bathurst, New Brunswick, and down in Yarmouth, and St. John, New Brunswick, Fredericton, New Brunswick, and Riverside.
What were some of your best memories racing at Riverside in the 70s?
The best memories. I guess when you win, you get the best memories. We won a few there. But I stopped racing, and my daughter was racing, and my son.
Mm-hmm.
So I took over the helm at the MASCAR, they call it, Maritime Association of Stock Car Automobile Racing.
And I was going to jump to that, Jim. What was the decision to stop racing and then pretty much run racing?
Age.
How old were you when you retired?
Oh, probably 65, 60 probably.
So what were the beginnings of MASCAR, and why was it important to establish that series here in the Maritimes?
Well, it brought the racers together, and it made it better for the track, too, because there'd be specials everywhere we went, you see. The cars, they improved, as we went. And what it did, it brought bigger sponsors, like we had Budweiser and Skoll Tobacco and, some heavy sponsorships back then.
MASCAR raced at Riverside right from the get-go, too?
Yeah.
Was there a touring series in the 70s before MASCAR?
No. It was just hit and run with everybody.
Just these local events?
Yeah. We even was together and ran the road races with the Moosehead Grand Prix there in the Halifax, the city of Halifax there for 2 years.
I want to ask you about a race at Riverside. 1977, the first 250 race that was brought in. Did you race any other 250 races aside from, like, the International at River Glade?
Yeah, I won the International there 2 years. I ran 4 years straight and won the first one. The second one, fan bell come off with about 10 laps to go when I was leading, and I won the next one, and then the one after that, the fourth one, my carburetor piled up on me. So I think I would have had all four of them if the things hadn't happened to
clean
the
sweep
automobile.
But that 1977 250 race, do you have any memories of the first 250 we had at Riverside?
That was the first 250.
Yeah.
And we had quite a few guys from Toronto there. There was Biederman and Watson and Roofer. There was quite a few. I guess there must have been six or seven. Junior Henley, too, was reaching his prime then, too.
And did you race against Biederman and those other Ontario drivers in Ontario before coming to the Maritimes?
Yes, I did. Biederman and me come down together, and we sort of helped each other, and what we did to help with the expenses, everything that was made went into the pot, and we split the whatever we made. I'd win one, he'd win one, and we'd split up whatever we made.
Did you have any big battles with him on the track?
No, he was good with me, but he was a tough old driver there with most guys. Him and Hendley had a few squabbles.
What about your experiences racing Junior Hanley?
He's tough. He was a good, well, he spent a lot of time on his car, and he had a real good car, and he could really drive. So when I came down to take over here, he went up to Ontario and took over where I was.
Oh, almost a flip-flop.
Yeah, pretty well. I ran 1 year down here with him, then he turned around and went up to Ontario.
What were your experiences working as the president of MASCAR, just kind of going back to what you were saying earlier?
Well, somebody had to take it over and get it rolling, so I was president, but I had a lot of good help, people from New Brunswick mostly, because actually there was more cars in New Brunswick than there was in Nova Scotia of that type, and there was a few guys there that went together with me, and we put it together and got a couple of big sponsors, and then we'd negotiate with the tracks for purses and races, so it worked out real well.
And then from there, 2001, MASCAR's gone, but then the Pro Stock Tour starts up. You had involvement in that, too.
Well, what happened, I sort of dropped off the MASCAR bit there, and it ran itself for a couple of years and sort of went downhill to nothing. And Harry Poole and Cecil Vance wanted to get something going because they owned the Speedway here in Halifax, up by the airport.
Yep, Scotia Speed World.
And they sort of helped backed us, and me and Ernie Ledwidge there, we got together, and we just traveled around and gathered up enough drivers to put it all together. We went as far as Bathurst, New Brunswick, Moncton, Fredericton, all up in Cape Breton there to Sydney, and we gathered up enough drivers to really put the whole thing together.
How great was it to see when John Chisholm got the track back, when he completely renovated the facility?
Oh, that was the biggest thing that ever happened there. Actually, it's the nicest track in Canada right now.
What are your memories working and racing with John Chisholm?
John Chisholm was one of the best I've ever met there. When I first come down and we were racing in Yarmouth, I rode back from Yarmouth to Halifax here with him in the car, and that's just the year after that is when he put the track there together.
Did he swing it by you to say, hey, I got an idea about building a track up in Antigonish?
Yeah, well, we talked about it, but he flew down to Bristol, Tennessee, and scaled it down and come back and put it together.
Did you ever race with John?
Yeah, at Lucasville.
What was he like as a racer?
Well, John was just right up there with the rest of them. He was a hard runner.
You're still involved with racing, as we showed Saturday night at Riverside. What did it mean to you to be inducted into the Canadian Motorsports Hall of Fame and then the Maritime Motorsports Hall of Fame?
It was quite a thrill there when they called me from Toronto there a few years back, and I had to go out and do that one. Then, well, Maritime, I helped get the place going, and Ernie McLean and his wife there, I guess, nominated me, and it was quite a thrill.
With the involvement of the Pro Stock Tour, you were still there when they joined on with the IWK 250. How important was that?
That was really good. That was the most important race of the year. John there donated $1 million in one of the races there to the hospital there. It was the biggest show of the year for the Maritimes.
The crown jewel of the Maritime Pro Stock Tour.
That's what it is, crown jewel.
Jim, over the years of your involvement racing at Riverside as a promoter and the president of MASCAR and a helping hand with the Pro Stock Tour, what is your favorite memory at Riverside International Speedway?
You had to ask me that one. It's when I won the 100 lapper there, and me and Frank Frazier had a little bit of a tussle, and after the race, he'd come down and have a little bit of a fight with us, and broke my trophy. That was in the 70s, yeah, just before I hung up my helmet.
Did you turn him in the wall or give him the bump and run? What happened there?
Well, it was a little bit of, he spun me out, and then when we came around there, I just gave him a little brake check, and he went down underneath and broke his rad.
But you came out on top.
Well, I came out on top in the race and then on the bottom in the fight.
That's one way to put it. Jim, it's been a pleasure chatting with you, and it was an honor to help give that jacket to you on Saturday night at the Triple 50s, and we can expect that you're still going to be showing up at the track, right?
Oh, yes. I'll probably be there until I pack her in.
And you're still a working man.
Yeah, well, I go in every day.
McPhee Ford?
It's McPhee Ford, down just short distance from here. So Al and me, we started selling cars together with Forbes. Then Al went on to Pontiac there and took over that dealership and never stopped in that direction, and I stayed racing, so he owns the place. His son is the boss, and he wasn't even born when I started there.
And you're still going strong.
Still go down, yeah.
Jim, thank you so much for taking the time to share some memories of racing all over the Maritimes and at Riverside.
Well, I'm glad to help out.
Of course, and do you want to say anything to any fans that may be listening that grew up watching the Hugger?
I'll tell you what. My wife used to go out watching with a race in Sackville there, and she started watching racing. And didn't I end up, when my first wife died, I ended up marrying the one that used to watch me race. So it's quite a thrill.
Quite a thrill. Jim, thank you so much for taking the time.
Well, thank you.
He is known as the father of Maritime Canadian stock car racing. Promoter, racer, Ernie McLean is also on Victory Labs today. How are you, Ernie?
Very good, thank you.
It's good to be chatting with you. And earlier in this episode, we chatted with Jim Hallahan. We just honored him for 70 years involvement in racing. Isn't that something?
Sure is, yeah.
Ernie, I just want to ask you, what got you into racing long before you started at Riverside?
Well, Jim Hallahan actually got me into racing. I was living up in Ontario at the time, and Jim thought I should have a stock car. So, of course, anything you're looking for, Jim always had it. So he found a stock car for me, and he sold me my very first stock car.
Where did you first race?
At Pinecrest Speedway in Toronto.
Small track?
A quarter-mile track, yeah. In fact, I copied River Glade Speedway off of Pinecrest Speedway, and because it was quite popular and quite the boys all liked it pretty well, so I made River Glade Speedway somewhat the same.
And that's what I was going to dive into. You're back in New Brunswick. There was not really a racing scene before you built River Glade?
River Glade was the first paved track in the Maritime Provinces, yeah. I came back. I wanted to move back to New Brunswick because I'm a New Brunswicker, and so I wanted something to do, so we decided we'd move back and we'd build a racetrack. And we came down, we bought an old farm, and we cut out a quarter-mile paved quarter-mile track, and we raced dirt on it the first year, and in 64. And then in 65, we opened in May with a paved track and lights and grandstand and the whole thing.
Did you ever race at your own track?
No, I never. No, I was too busy trying to promote it.
And one of the events he promoted was the River Glade International. What's the details on that race?
Well, that was our special race of the year. That was kind of wound the season down. And, of course, I always invited cars in from Ontario or the States or wherever I get them from. And, of course, knowing Jim, I got Jim to get some cars from out of Pinecrest and come down. So Jim brought down... Oh, I had generally five or six cars that had raced at Pinecrest. And Jim won the International twice, in 66 and 68. And he raced a few times more than that. I used to gear up, go around all the racetracks and gear up a special event that time of year. I'd run the International River Glade on Saturday night, and then they'd run the whole week. They'd just race around the Maritimes, 100-lap races, and, of course, the boys would all stay and race at those tracks, and then they go home.
And Riverside would have been involved in that?
Riverside was generally involved. And then later years in Riverside, and Riverside wasn't even going at that particular time.
When was the first time you went to Riverside or even heard about it being built?
Well, actually, I built another track down at Harvey Boucher, and Riverside wasn't there then. And then I heard it was going to be built, and I heard John Chisholm was going to build a Riverside Speedway, and I was lucky enough to sell Harvey Boucher, and I've come back to Riverglade, and that was that. And of course, I knew that was back when it was first built, and I never went there very much, but quite a long ways from Moncton to Riverside. Of course, in those days, we had to travel the old Sunrise Trail. It wasn't a very good highway traveling down to Riverside.
When did you start to get involved with Riverside? Was that in the 80s or the late 70s?
No, I leased the Riverside Speedway. I run it for 5 years. We run it in the 80s for 5 years, 85, I think, and somewhere along there.
How did that come to be?
Well, it was sitting idle. It wasn't running, and there was no racing. There was quite an interest down around that area, and I knew a lot of the boys that raced at Harvey Boucher. And, of course, Harvey Boucher at this point was closed up, and there was no racing, and Riverside wasn't racing. Nobody was running it, so I talked to John Chisholm, and he let me have the track, so I run it for 5 years.
And one of the events you brought was the NASCAR North Series. How did that come about?
Well, I had NASCAR North at Riverglade, and that went over pretty good there, so I thought maybe I'd bring it to Riverside, and we had it at Riverside Speedway, and that turned out real good. We had one of the largest crowds we ever had at Riverside with NASCAR North.
Who were some of the star drivers in NASCAR North at that time?
Oh, Beaver Dragon and was one of them. I forget now. It's a long time ago. It's A lot of them from around this end of the States and Massachusetts and Maine and that. So there's a few of the NASCAR guys there that's racing NASCAR that was up the Riverside. There's one of his sons is racing NASCAR now. I just forget his name.
Randy LaJoy?
Randy LaJoy, yes. Randy LaJoy, he raced Riverside and Riverglade, yeah, both.
Okay, and from a fan perspective, what were the differences between what was happening at Riverside and Riverglade then, and then you bring in NASCAR North?
We were putting in about half what they're putting in now. We put in about 5,000 people for NASCAR North at Riverside. Of course, we didn't have the amount of grandstands they have now, and they're putting in, you know, 7 or 8, maybe 10,000 people now.
And you brought it back in 1985 as well, the NASCAR North Series?
Yes, I brought them in several times, and then it comes the ACT Tour. Tom Curley was heading the NASCAR North, and then he dropped that, and he took the ACT, what they call the ACT Tour. I brought the ACT Tour in a couple of times, and then I up the Riverglade here, I brought Dale Earnhardt in.
You beat me to it. I was going to ask about that. I actually saw a video of that race for the first time ever about a month ago.
Yeah.
How did Dale Earnhardt come to the Maritimes in 1988?
Well, it's quite a story. I was down to the Daytona, and Bobby Allison won the Daytona 500. And, of course, I was always in around, hanging around as close as I could get into them, so... Anyway, I struck up a deal with Bobby Allison to come run at Riverglade at a special event. So anyway, that was all set. He was coming. And he got in that bad accident at Pocono.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, they kept telling me he's coming, he's coming, he's coming. And, of course, I'm still advertising he's coming. And I kind of had a feeling he wasn't going to. And all of a sudden, I got a call one day, and they said, well, what about we send Bobby Allison's brother up your way? And I said, well, that's not going to be much good, sending Bobby Allison's brother. I need a name. Well, then they come back later and they said, how about we send Dale Earnhardt? I just fell out of the chair and I said, well, yeah, okay, that'd be good. So they sent Dale Earnhardt. So it was all through a booking agent, like, you know.
Right.
And so anyway, Dale Earnhardt and his agent came, and he run the race, and he had a great time. He signed autographs, and I picked him up at the airport and I brought him out to the track. And of course, it rained at the end, so it wasn't a good finish, but he made quite a splash.
What did Dale think of the Maritimes?
Well, he wasn't here long enough to really get any opinion, but he had fun with the drivers. He milled around with the drivers pretty good and had fun with them, and he got along great. Everybody liked him real well.
Good, good. And a little earlier as well, you helped launch MassCar. That's actually what I chatted with Jim a little earlier. How did MassCar start, and what was your involvement?
Well, we were running what we call the late model modified, and we were getting, you know, only had about 10, 12, 15 cars at most, and of course, crowds weren't that great, and racing was down pretty bad right at that particular time, and so I said, I had a meeting with them, and I said, listen, boys, this is not fair to you guys, the amount of money we're able to pay is, and you should join a club. All you just get together, there isn't enough late model modifieds in the Maritimes to put on a good show, so why don't you just all get together, and so they held a meeting right here at the River Glade at the Speedway, first meeting, and they all just decided to, they formed a little committee, and they decided to call it MassCar, and then they started in. They run all 100-lap races, and that's how it all started.
And Riverside was involved with MassCar, too.
Yeah, Riverside, they raced in just special events at all the tracks. They'd go maybe once or twice a year, and they go to Riverside. And
with your years of involvement at Riverside, what is your favorite memory working at Riverside?
Well, I guess my favorite memory would be bringing the NASCAR North in.
And did you work with John Chisholm when you were involved at Riverside?
John Chisholm was, I've worked directly with John Chisholm. Every time I go down, I'd stop into his office and talk to him and tell him what we're doing, keep him up to space on what we're doing. If I wanted anything done around the track, I'd tell John, and boy, I'll tell you, he was good. He'd always do it for me. And like when I had NASCAR North, he went in. They built a big piece on the grandstand, went all over the grandstands, and done a lot of extra work around the track for me. Didn't charge me any money for it.
Good, he's a good boss then.
Oh, John was a excellent guy.
And one final question about the Maritime Motorsports Hall of Fame. You're a Canadian Motorsports Hall of Fame inductee, but you started the Maritime Motorsports Hall of Fame. Why was that so important?
Well, there was a guy in Nova Scotia actually was working at it, a guy by the name of Blaine Page. He was trying to get it going. He called me up, and he wanted me to be involved in New Brunswick part to help him out in New Brunswick to get some members and people, and I said, yeah, I would help. So he kept working at it and working at it. He wasn't getting anywhere with it, and finally he come to me, and he said, why don't you take it over? And I said, no, I don't want to take it over. So finally we had sold the Speedway, and we were running a motel at the time. And we had a meeting at the motel, and I guess Jim and all the rest of everybody was there. So I guess they decided I was going to be the one to head it up. So they elected me president, and we started at it. And I said, well, if we're going to do it, we're going to get a building, and we're going to do it. So we went to work at it, and we got over a million dollar building and 10,000 square foot building, and that's how it all started.
The rest is history.
Rest is history. There it is, sitting there now. It's going good.
Ernie, I appreciate you sharing some memories of Riverside and Jim Hallahan, who he shared memories about you and you two in Ontario. Can you share just one final memory about working with Jim?
Look, anything, when I was up in Ontario, I run a garage, and of course Jim sold Herbrand Tools. He had the tool truck. And anything you wanted to buy, you see Jim, and Jim had to sell. He could bought tools and bought the old stock car, and Jim was always a good friend. I've known Jim for over 65 years, and we've always been good friends right through. And then when I asked Jim when I come down here to build the Speedway, I asked Jim to come and be my partner and go in with me. Of course, he was running he just started a Studebaker dealership, and he was kind of working at that, and he said, no, he better stay where he was. He had a wife and family there, so anyway, that's the way it went. And Jim has but an excellent guy. He's the same today as he was 60 years ago.
Ernie, thank you so much for sharing all these great memories here on Victory Laps.
Thank you. I'm very thrilled to do it.
Some great stories from both Ernie McLean and Jim Hallahan, which has been the theme of Victory Laps this year, sharing stories about Riverside over the 50 years. Last episode, I got to chat with George Koskulik and Ken McIsaac. You can find that episode in the archives. Now moving on to housekeeping notes, the biggest event of the year is on the horizon, the IWK 250 presented by Steve Lewis. And we kick things off on Thursday, July 18th for the IWK Super Race Weekend with a little tailgate party featuring the Matt Minglewood Band. That's right after Test and Tune. You can see Matt Minglewood with the IWK 250 Weekend Pass, or you can spend $20 just to see Matt Minglewood. And if the kids want to go too, it's only $10 for youth aged 8 to 18. You can get your Weekend Pass for the IWK 250 Super Race Weekend online at riversidespeedway.ca, and that includes everything: the Test and Tune, the tailgate party, Friday night with the Napa Sportsman Series in the Maritime League of Legends on July 19th, and then of course on Saturday, July 20th for the IWK 250. If you're looking for single day tickets, they go on sale starting June 18th. For camping at the IWK 250, it is getting tight. There are some spots open, but you better go online and get in contact with us, info@riversidespeedway.ca, and contact us as soon as possible. Lap sponsor packages are still available for the 250, and they start at $100, which includes a one-lap sponsorship, IWK 250 Weekend Pass, and your choice of a Riverside International Speedway 50th Anniversary hat or t-shirt. There are a limited number of laps available, so don't wait. When they're all gone, they are all gone. After the 250 weekend, the next event coming up in August is the Bumper to Bumper 300 weekend, August 16th and 17th. On Friday night, it's the Napa Sportsman Series and the East Coast Mini Stock Tour, followed by a huge day on August 17th. Along with the NASCAR Pinty Series and the Maritime League of Legends, we have the inaugural Show and Shine event. The Rev It Up at Riverside Show and Shine event will be held on the Speedway grounds from 1 p.m. to 5 p.m., and it's free to attend. And if you would like to show off your ride, please find the registration info at riversidespeedway.ca. Victory Laps is part of the Throwback Thursday celebrations for the 50th anniversary, of course, where every Thursday we pay tribute. We have fun stuff like trivia and photos and video, remembering those who have made a significant contribution to our history over the 50 years. And if you would like to send videos or photos, or you have a suggestion, get in touch with us at info@riversidespeedway.ca. The checkered flag is waving. I'm Dylan Langille. Thank you again for listening to Victory Laps, all part of the Throwback Thursday celebrations for Riverside International Speedway.